Everyone, welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, sitting next to my colleague Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, Thanksgiving is almost here. And as we hit the middle of the week, it's time to turn the page and look ahead to the Packers' next opponent. And that will be in Pittsburgh, Heinz Field, Sunday night football in prime time. And when you look at this Pittsburgh Steelers offense, it's not just that they're coming off of a 40-point game on Thursday Night Football a week ago against the Tennessee Titans, but boy, you name it. Ben Roethlisberger, Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown. Where do you want to start?
Well, I think it has to start with Antonio Brown, right? I mean, this guy is probably the best receiver in the game right now. His story is so interesting when you see where he came from, being a late-round draft pick, developing into the receiver he has, and being honestly one of the best playmakers, I think, in the entire NFL, regardless of position. He gives them a giant weapon, and when you look at the way their offense is constructed, yeah, you have Bell, you have Juju Smith-Schuster, different guys that have sort of stepped to the plate, but let's be real, when you're looking at the scouting report for the Pittsburgh Steelers, you're looking at Antonio Brown.
Yeah, his numbers already this year. He's at 1,000 yards through 10 games, which means the math is easy there. He's on pace for 1,600 through 16 games. Just the 6 touchdowns, which is not an eye-popping number by any means, but the Steelers seem to be scoring plenty of points here, and he is also a weapon in the return game. He hasn't really busted any of those big punt returns yet this year, but the point being, whether it's a pass over the middle, whether it's a sideways slip screen, any way you get the ball in this guy's hands, he has a chance to score. That's just the kind of player he is.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, the way Pittsburgh uses him, because they haven't been, like, scared off from using him on the punt return team. It's something he still does. He does it very well. And, you know, sometimes I think there is that pressure when you have a Pro Bowl, All-Pro type player to remove him from those units. They look at him as a guy that every time he touches the ball, he's a major weapon for this offense. So they want to be able to get him as many touches in as many different ways as possible. And for Ben Roethlisberger's perspective, I mean, this is a guy that does have 10 interceptions right now on the season. His actual passer rating is really on pace to be the lowest it has been since 2008, but he has Antonio Brown, and that chemistry that they've built up together, I think it's one of the best combinations in the league.
Yeah, and I think unlike last week when we talked about the double-digit interceptions for Joe Flacco, the 10 interceptions for Ben Roethlisberger is a misleading number,
right?
Because five of them, half of them were in one game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Steelers have played, you know, what you'd call a couple of stinkers in a sense this year. You know, that loss to the Jaguars with the 5 picks, that was certainly an ugly one. They pulled out very close victories over both the Browns and the Colts in games that people really expected them to dominate more. They didn't really do that, yet they still found a way to win, and that's the name of the game in the NFL. And then they did lose at Soldier Field to the Chicago Bears in a very surprising result early in the season. But all that said, this is a team on a 5-game winning streak.
Right.
They've got a Super Bowl winning quarterback. And then when you talk about Le'Veon Bell, one of the top running backs in the league, he's just shy of 900 yards right now on the season, which means he's on pace for 1,400. If he hits that and Brown hits the 1,600, that's 3,000 yards between two weapons on your offense. That's and maybe they even hit that last year. I didn't check their statistics from a year ago, but this team has weapons. And then you throw in, you mentioned Smith-Schuster. This is a guy who caught the 97-yard touchdown pass against the Detroit Lions, the play of the game there at Ford Field that really flipped that one in Pittsburgh's favor.
Yeah, the youngest player in the NFL right now at 20 years old. Pretty remarkable what he's been able to do coming in year one. The one thing to touch on Bell, for an instance, that's interesting is, yeah, you're right, he does have almost 900 yards rushing. He's needed the touches, though. He has over 230 carries already on the season. He's only averaging 3.8 per carry, and his longest run is only 27 yards. So he's been a guy that really just been grinding away at defenses this year. You look at last week with Baltimore, they have what appear to be about 37 different running backs that they can use in that backfield. The Steelers are very upfront and honest. It's Le'Veon Bell. You have to stop him. Yeah, they have James Conner, the rookie out of Pittsburgh as well, but Bell is where everything starts for them in the run game. And then once they establish that, that's when you see Big Ben start to go to work with Brown and Smith-Schuster on the outside. Got to give that young man a lot of credit for being able to come in. It isn't easy for receivers at a rookie level coming into an offense and being able to assert themselves right away, and he's done it.
Yeah, and when you talk about Le'Veon Bell in this Pittsburgh running game, this is a very different style of running back, a very different right. style of running game. Everybody talks about Bell's patience and his vision. We saw maybe a little bit of a preview of that with Jordan Howard with the Bears, the sure. way they like to right. run the stretch play, yep. and he likes to really be patient and try to hit his hole. Well, Le'Veon Bell's patience is like Jordan Howard's times five almost. Yeah. The way he really waits to pick his moment, to pick his time to stick the foot in the ground and go. And it's something that can be difficult to adjust to when this isn't an opponent you play all the time. Right. This is the first time really the Packers have gone against Le'Veon Bell.
It is. And one of the things that stands out to me about his particular running style, there's such a fine line there because you look at a lot of maybe more the average type backs in the league. They can't get away with that. If they hesitate, they lose their first move. They're getting stopped for a 1 or 2 yard gain. But his game is just it's so multiple.
Yeah.
And how he can able to find ways, get holes, and generate to the second level. It's something to watch. He's probably one of the most, if not the most, entertaining running back in the NFL to watch because of that reason. And just the fact that he does have sometimes that hesitation and how it really behooves him, it's something. You don't really see it much because a lot of guys are just afraid to do it because they end up getting stuck behind an offensive lineman and getting stuffed for no gain.
Yeah, you said it. He's a guy who he has a style. He can execute a running style that not a lot of other running backs can even attempt in this league just because of the speed of defenses and the way they play. But Bell's got it figured out. So this Pittsburgh Steelers defense is something special too, though, and we'll get to that after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford, Wes Hodkowitz over there. Wes, this Pittsburgh Steelers defense, you could say Pittsburgh's always been known for defense, and this is certainly part of the backbone of this 8-2 Steelers team. When I think of one guy right now, this particular Pittsburgh Steelers defense, I think the one that jumps out at me is that young linebacker from Ohio State,
yeah.
Ryan Shazier. He's he's really turning into a special defensive player in this league, isn't he?
He really is, and I'll be completely 100% honest with you. Him coming out in 2014, he was probably my favorite player in that draft class just because of you saw the direction that defenses were going. Some are turning into these hybrid defensive backs. The thing that's interesting about Shazier is he's so darn quick that you can kind of use him in that way, but he's also pretty big, you know, in that 230, 235 range. So in a lot of ways, I think he's a perfect fit for a 3-4 scheme. I can see why Pittsburgh liked him. I thought him and C.J. Mosley were very clearly the top two inside backers in that draft class. Now, neither one of them were available where the Packers were picking. They fortunately ended up getting Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, so really doesn't become that big of a story in terms of, you know, they ended up with a fine player too. But those are the type of difference makers that I think you see in Pittsburgh's defensive front. Very sturdy up front, and I think that's allowed them to be one of the most consistent units in the league. You look at their statistics across the board, they're basically top 10 in everything, and I think it starts with how sturdy they are with that front seven.
Yeah, and when you look at some of the numbers that jump out, this defense has 12 interceptions on the season, four of them coming in their last game. They picked off Marcus Mariota from Tennessee four times, and Shazier is the leader of the bunch with three picks, and they have nine different players on this defense that have intercepted a pass this season. That's pretty impressive when you think about it. And then you mentioned the front seven. This is a group that's piled up 34 sacks on the season. They have four players with four or more sacks, led by Cameron Hayward with seven, and then also the rookie T.J. Watt in there with four. So a lot of guys that, you know, you talk about game planning and having targets on certain guys, you know, it's hard to exactly figure out how many targets you need on this Steelers defense, because they've got playmakers front end, back end. It's just an all around tough unit.
Yeah, they made an investment in Bud Dupree a number of years ago. He has 4 sacks. T.J. Watt from Wisconsin, everyone knows his story, has 4 sacks. And now they got Tuitt back as well, and he has a sack in each of the last 2 games for the Steelers. So in that way, there is a lot of areas that the Packers are going to have to emphasize in this one. The thing that is interesting, it's been really the biggest thing, is them trying to stay healthy as a unit. Shazier, being as dynamic as he's been, has had some injury issues. Obviously, he lost Tuitt for a little bit. But when they have that unit together, they play off each other extremely well. That sort of chemistry that they've built up, that cohesiveness, it shows. And a guy like Cameron Hayward, too, the way he's developed in that scheme as well, like you mentioned, already having 7 sacks in the season. When you can get that kind of production out of your defensive front, your defensive lineman in a 3-4, that's going to set up everything else for what you're doing.
Yeah, and there's really only been one team, when you look at things statistically, there's only been one team that has put together a good rushing day against this defense, and that was the Chicago Bears back in week 3 at Soldier Field. The Bears racked up over 200 yards on the ground and ended up winning that game in overtime. But as I mentioned in the first segment, some of these games where the Steelers have had kind of a letdown. People use the phrase they play down to their competition, so to speak. They aren't, this ultra-efficient machine every week that people expect. Usually that's more happening on the offensive side. When you look at the numbers, this defense is pretty darn consistent. Yeah. They're not allowing much more than, 13 to 17 points on any given week. If you're going to beat these guys, you have got to beat them in a low-scoring game, because I just don't think you're going to be able to, to win some kind of a shootout. If that offense gets going, this defense just isn't likely to give up 30 points.
No, they aren't. And especially looking at that secondary, too. I talk so much about the defensive front, but, they end up being able to get Joe Hayden right before the season with the situation that unfolded there with Cleveland.
That's right.
He ends up moving teams within the division, has become a starter for them. Mike Mitchell at the safety position. I mean, Sean Davis is having a good year. Cody Sensabaugh, as we mentioned, having that interception a week ago in that whole barrage of defense that they had against Marcus Mariota and the Titans. That's really, I think, one of the big difference markers. Right now, if you look at it depth chart-wise, T.J. Watt's their only starter that is a rookie. They're a very veteran unit. They have a lot of experience, a lot of homegrown developed talent, and I think that's one of the big reasons. When you look at this unit and how it's playing so far, that's one of the reasons why they have that chemistry, is because of how much experience they have playing with each other in a lot of ways. And even a guy like Hayden coming into this defense, the knowledge of the scheme and the knowledge of the league, I think has really helped him, mesh really quickly into that system.
Yeah, and from a playmaking point of view, coming off of a 4-interception game against the Titans, that these Pittsburgh Steelers are probably licking their chops a little bit with Brett Hundley coming in off of his roughest outing with the 3 interceptions against Baltimore and all that. So Packers really have to button it down on offense. We talked all last week about continue to protect the football. Then that didn't happen. Right. The Packers have to get back to that, because you start turning the ball over against these guys and it's curtains.
And to make one more point on that too, the pressure comes from everywhere. I mean, even Vince Williams at inside backer has 6 sacks this season. I mean, Shazier is an inside backer, but he can make plays on the ball, as you said as well. In addition to just the normal pressure they're getting from the outside, from guys like Dupree and Watt. Very physical, very multiple, and it's one of the reasons why they've been able to generate those turnovers, because the pressure's coming from all sides.
Yeah, no doubt about it. With that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkiewicz in that one. And Wes, we have 3 Thanksgiving football games on tap here, starting with a big one in the NFC North, Minnesota against Detroit. But before we get to that, I want to ask you, any Thanksgiving football memories from the childhood, the upbringing in the Hodkiewicz household that are worth mentioning here?
Well, I do have a tradition of watching Planes, Trains, and Automobiles on Thanksgiving. That is one big thing.
I don't know if there's any football in that movie.
No, the Bears, when they talk about the Bears in that particular scene.
There
but we
go.
Don't need to get into all that. Great movie, though, if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Football-wise, not a whole lot of things. I don't know if you noticed or not. I'm pretty scrawny, so I didn't really play football too often. I was the youngest of all my cousins.
Okay.
So when we did go outside, I usually ended up crying back to my mother after about 5 minutes. But other than that, always a great opportunity to sit down, my favorite holiday, eat some Thanksgiving food, and get to watch some football.
Yeah, it's my favorite holiday as well, and I'll just share this. It's been seared into my memory because I think it was one of the games that actually got me really excited and hooked on football. It was 1980. I don't mean to date myself, but I was 8 years old in 1980. We were always at my grandmother's for Thanksgiving back then. And nobody else in the family wanted to watch the Lions game. I always did. It was like, hey, football's on. Yeah. And it was the Bears against the Lions. The game goes to overtime, and the Bears kick returner, Dave Williams, runs the overtime kickoff back 100 yards for a touchdown. First time in NFL history that an overtime game ended on the kickoff. And I was just, I didn't even care about the Bears or the Lions. I was just, I thought it was the most exciting thing in the world I'd ever seen. I was 8 years old, and ever since then, I was watching it on this little black and white TV in my grandmother's den, and I'll never forget that. But
those are some of the special memories, though, that you create. And also remember, at that time, you didn't have Thursday Night Football. That was one of always the big things, even though I don't have, like, these great, awesome memories of those games, but I do remember that it was special, because you could watch football right after you got done eating. And usually you couldn't do stuff like that. So that's always something nice to remember.
Yeah, well, Thanksgiving football in Detroit is certainly an ongoing tradition. And this year it is, once again, the Minnesota Vikings heading in there. Big game here in the NFC Northwest. The Vikings 8-2, the Detroit Lions at 6-4. So the Lions looking to actually sweep the Vikings because they beat them in Minnesota earlier and trying to get back within one game. I think what's the hard thing to pick with the Packers at 5-5, you know, division title, do you aim for the wild card? Where are you at right now? So who do you root for for Packers fans here at this game on Thursday?
The biggest question, number one question, as I was going through inbox.
Yeah, it's popped up all over.
For writing our Thanksgiving Day Insider inbox on the website is who you cheer for in this. I'm not a mathematician. I don't know how that all works out as far as who you should be cheering for. My gut tells me it's the Lions, because the closer that division is with having both Detroit and Minnesota on the schedule in the last 2 weeks of the regular season for the Packers, I think the more it benefits Green Bay. I'll say this. I mean, if the Vikings win that, you're now at 9-2. They're starting to run away. So, I mean, you got to try to keep them within arm's reach. And I also think this is an important game for Detroit to slow down the Case Keenum hype train. Get some questions built up there for Minnesota, because right now they're really settling in offensively.
Yeah, this right now, I looked at the schedule. This is the make or break stretch for the Minnesota Vikings here. They're on the road at Detroit on Thanksgiving. Then they go on the road to Atlanta and on the road to Carolina the next couple of weeks. I can't figure out exactly which is better for the Packers here, if the Vikings lose or if the Lions lose, because I think in a lot of ways it depends on what Minnesota does against the Falcons and against the Panthers, because if Minnesota is going to beat both of those teams on the road, those being teams that would be potentially in the wild card hunt, then you might as well, you know, also tag another loss on the Lions and the Packers' wild card chances look better. But if Minnesota's going to go on the road to those NFC South teams and lose, well, then why not lose on Thanksgiving and start them on, you know, maybe a longer losing streak that does tighten up the division? So not knowing how those next two games are going to go, I think, is what makes it really hard to decide which team to root for. But you're right. The Case Keenum hype train is rolling here. There was that momentary thing of, well, are they going to go to Bridgewater or not? They absolutely can't right now, the way Case Keenum is playing. The Detroit Lions, they're always tough at home on Thanksgiving. This is a big game for them. I expect the Detroit Lions to throw everything they've got at Minnesota.
And historically, they play pretty darn well on that Thanksgiving game as well. So, I mean, these are all different factors you have to take into account. But Minnesota, you know what you're getting defensively. It's the offense right now that seems to be settling in. Latavius Murray had a big week last week. You need to be able, if you're the Lions, you need to be able to create some questions there, because they're certainly thinking about winning that division as well.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of other games on Thanksgiving I want to touch on as well, and we'll do that after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, for the second time in about 3 weeks, I blew the sponsor business at the end of segment three. So Here we go. Today's a perfect day to fill up with some new Campbell's Chunky Max soup. Chunky Max is loaded with more meat than you can handle, a lot more. We're talking 40% more than a comparable chunky soup. So go on, fill up with new Campbell's Chunky Max soup. Campbell's Chunky Soup, the official soup partner of the Green Bay Packers. And with that, two other games on Thanksgiving, Wes, the Chargers at the Cowboys and the Giants against the Redskins. A Chargers team that a lot of people starting to wonder if they might actually be the best team in the AFC West, with the Kansas City Chiefs on a little bit of a downslide here, and the Chargers lost some absolutely heartbreaking games early in the season. But they're getting it together now, and the Dallas Cowboys, quite honestly, may be fighting to save their season on Thanksgiving at home.
Be very honest with you, Mike. There's three games on Thanksgiving. I think this is the biggest one, to be honest with you. As weird as that sounds with how Minnesota's playing and the implications of that game against Detroit, the Chargers and Cowboys are both trying to salvage their season here. The Chiefs have come back down to earth.
Yep.
Oakland did not end up being the team everybody thought they were going to be. And Denver's is a mess right now with their quarterback situation. This is a real chance for the Chargers to get back in that race. So they need to come out, have a good performance here against the Cowboys team that's still trying to find themselves. Dak Prescott coming off the worst game of his Cowboys career, arguably his football career. He needs the rebound, because they did get the running game going with Alfred Morris. You just need to settle it down now with the turnovers.
And it sounds like the Cowboys will still be without that all-pro left tackle Tyron Smith, a guy that they have missed sorely there. But then another matchup in the NFC East, the Giants against the Redskins. The Redskins, another team, they've lost some really tough games. That one in New Orleans last week was a tough one. They also lost a tough one to Minnesota recently as well, when they put up a bunch of points. The Giants, they go and beat the Kansas City Chiefs in overtime when nobody gave them, you know, a snowball's chance in that ball game. So Ben McAdoo, obviously, fighting to save his job and get as many wins as he can. And one more loss for the Redskins, and it's probably over for them.
Probably, especially with the way the direction that division's gone this year. I will say this, Michael. I think this matchup in particular comes down to the running game. Who is more productive there? Is it Samaje Perine, who's now cemented himself as the starter?
Yeah.
Or is it Orleans Darkwa, who I think has been a small bright spot for a New York Giants team that's really struggled this year? I'm interested to see who wins that battle.
Yeah, I really like the addition of the night game on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I know it was always just the two afternoon games when we were growing up and whatnot, but I think it's neat to have the whole three. So with that, we will call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, and happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We'll see you next time.